Wing TV, with Victor Thorne and Lisa Giuliani. The revolution is being televised.
Hello, it's Friday, January 20th, and you're watching Wing TV. I'm Lisa Giuliani.
And I'm Victor Thorne. Welcome to Wing TV. What a week it's been, huh? We did 5 shows here, plus we did 4 other interviews. The last one was on Hesham Talawi's show last night. You can find that at currentissues.tv. And what a roundtable that was. Lisa, myself, Hesham, Michael Collins Piper, Mark Glenn.
Frederick Tobin.
I mean, it was just a wild thing. It went till midnight, so check that out.
We couldn't sleep last night after
that. And there's a lot of other things going on, but we're going to catch everybody up on that on Monday. Because right now, we have Mr. Ralph Epperson joining us again. He was with us last week, but there was so much to cover that we figured we'd bring him on. He's the author of books such as The Unseen Hand, The New World Order, Masonry, Conspiracy Against Christianity, and his latest work, which is very intriguing, is Jesse James, U.S. Senator. So we'd like to welcome Mr. Ralph Epperson to Wing TV. How you doing, Ralph?
Welcome, Ralph.
Good, fine, Victor. Thank you very much for allowing me to do this.
Oh, it's our pleasure for sure. Now, before we start asking you about your latest book, let everyone know how they can find your website and everything that you have available.
Well, you're very kind. Just simply www, which is all of them, are then dot Ralph Epperson, R-A-L-P-H, Epperson with 2 P's, E-P-P-E-R-S-O-N, connected.com, RalphEpperson.com, and you can go to my website, which has it's a copy of my catalog, latest available catalog.
All righty.
You also have a website for this book, too, the Jesse James book, don't you?
That's correct. Just Senator Jesse James.
Okay, very good. Now, in this book, Ralph, you say that Jesse James actually didn't die in 1882, but he lived until 1951 to be 103 years old. You also said that he assumed 72 different identities throughout his lifetime, and one of them was actually of a gentleman named William Andrews Clark, who was a U.S. senator. So, Ralph, if you're sitting in a bar or you're sitting in your local coffee shop and you start talking about this and somebody's sitting beside you and they say, Ralph, you're crazy. You're out of your mind to say that Jesse James lived that long. What would you say to him?
Well, like I do with all of my books and materials, I say, if you're on a jury, you've got to hear the evidence. I've studied this thing for probably 20 years. I've talked to people that have researched it far more than I have, and they know far more than I do, and they admit that I'm on the right track. Plus, I've talked to Clark family members. I believe my story is true. There's ample evidence to conclude that I'm right.
Okay.
Ralph, some people think that Jesse James staged his own death. Supposedly, in July 17, 1995, though, a man named James Starrs exhumed what's said to be the body of Jesse James. The skeletal remains fit the profile, and a DNA material taken from the grave, that's material from the teeth, matched up with known descendants of Jesse James' sister. So how do you reconcile that?
Well, if you do some research, you'll find out that the teeth did not come from the grave. That's the problem.
Well, in the Richmond Times-Dispatch, they said the teeth did come from the grave. Are you saying they didn't?
But even Dr. Starrs admitted that they did not.
Oh, where'd they get the teeth from?
That's the question. We've got to find out. But I'll tell you what we know. The casket was buried. The casket of Jesse James in 1902 was brought to the Kearney Cemetery and reburied. And so now in 1985, where it was, they dug it up again, and they found not a metal casket, but a wooden casket. And they were supposed to have found a metal casket. But Dr. Starrs was not deterred by that. He admitted that the people in 1902 were wrong. Now, wait a minute. How would he know that?
Uh-huh.
The casket was metal. But anyway, let's go even beyond that. They dug it up, and they found that the teeth, there were something like 14 teeth found in that casket, and they were examined by a DNA expert. I've got his name in my book. It's an unusual name. I can't remember it right now, but it doesn't matter. Anyway, he claimed that the teeth were too badly mottled from liquor or smoking. And so now we go back to the wife of Jesse James, who was asked in the coroner's inquest about Jesse being a smoker. And she's under oath, and she was asked by the prosecutor, did Jesse smoke? badly modeled by cigarette smoke or chewing that they could not be used for DNA.
Okay.
Huh. Wait a minute, we got a major problem right here.
Yeah.
The wife, who knew him for 8 years, says he didn't smoke, but the teeth they dug up were badly damaged, according to the expert, in 1985, by smoke. Wait a minute, that should be a problem. So they looked around and found a story that there were two teeth that came from the cemetery, from the grave, and they used one of those. It was pure enough to find there was DNA. Those teeth were found in the museum, not at the gravesite.
Hmm.
Now, any scientist worth his salt would know that there's a Latin phrase called in situ, I-N-S-I-T-U, two words, which means at the place, at the time, which means that there's no way they can verify that those two teeth were in the gravesite because they weren't found there.
Okay. Now, Ralph, what we should do is just say that, I mean, we could talk about this, the entire interview, and it is very fascinating. The book is called Jesse James, U.S. Senator. But what I want to do, as I said before the show, is you're so adept at talking about money and how those people who attain it are able to use it to advance their power. And we know that people with wealth use it to create more wealth via usury, which is the lending of money, or lending of money. And you say in your book that it's a lot easier to make money from lending money than it is through employees who you have to pay for sick time and vacations and unions and so forth. So describe to people how the bankers use wealth to make more wealth for themselves.
Thank you. That's a good opportunity. Let me try to explain. People, when you employ them to make money, want vacations, want sick leave, want time off, want the pregnancy leave, their children get sick or they get sick, whatever, and you lose money. But money doesn't require any of that. Money allows you to work. It works 24 hours a day, 365
days
a year. It works on Christmas or whatever. So the goal is to get money to make money for you, not people. And that's what these wealthy people do, bankers. Now, let's define the word inflation out of any dictionary. You can go and check. Inflation is an increase in the quantity of money causing prices to rise. That means I'll use the example of Tucson. If we flew over the city of Tucson every day and kicked out $1 million in cash all over the city, prices would go up. If we did it again the next day, et cetera, prices were going up because it's an economic law. A deflation is the quantity being reduced, causing prices to go down.
Okay.
Well, if you want to get control of you've got to get control of the money supply so that you can cause price increases and price decreases.
Right.
And bankers love this because they can make money on either way.
I'm glad you brought this up because throughout history we've seen a cycle of inflation and then deflation. Explain why the bankers have such a vested interest in market volatility.
Well, of course, they can buy and sell. Let's go back to the crash of 29. The economic collapse of 29, crash, they call it, of 29, was planned at least in 1907. How do I know that? Because they created the crash of the economic collapse of 1907 to convince the American people to create a private central bank owned by private bankers, not the federal government, called the Federal Reserve. They got that in 1913. So after the Federal Reserve was created, which is owned by private bankers, not by the federal government, they could then create the crash of 1929.
Mm-hmm.
And they did that. How'd they do it? They set up, they encouraged the American people to buy stocks, and when they bought stocks, they were able to buy them on margin, which means they were able to borrow 90% of the value of the stock and come up with only 10%. So that if the market went up just 10%, they would double their money that they had invested. They'd say on a $100 stock, they'd invest $10. If the stock went up to 110, they would double their money. So the American people went and thought, gee, this is a way to make $1 million. Except those loans of the $90 on the $100 stock were under a 24-hour broker call loan.
That's right.
Which means they could call the loan and you had to pay it back within 24 hours. And so on October the 29th, 1929, the Federal Reserve, privately owned, called the loans, and everybody went to the stock market to sell their stock to get the $90 back to pay the bank, and the stock went down to $10, $20, whatever it was.
Yeah. Now, for, Ralph, in the past, when we were still on the gold standard, one of the biggest fears of the bankers was that there would be a run on the bank and everybody would want their gold at the same time. Well, of course, they didn't have enough gold to cover all of this because of all of the excessive loans that they make. So what these bankers did was they enlisted the government to become their ally with them, and they created these central banks. So describe to people how this has been one of the primary aims of the international bankers over the decades, is to create these central banks.
Well, let's define that very briefly. Let's talk about the Federal Reserve. That is our central bank.
Yep.
The Federal Reserve is independent. It is not federal. And you can prove that. Anyone listening right now can prove it. It's very easy to do. All you got to do is find a reserve, a branch bank. There's like 10 or 12 of them around the country. The nearest one to me in Tucson is San Francisco, I think, or maybe Denver. You get a Denver phone book and you look it up under the Federal Reserve in the government listings. And it's not listed.
It's not there.
Right.
It's listed in the white pages.
Under the business section, yeah.
Like Federal Express.
Yep.
Or federal mortgage company.
Right.
Or federal trucking or whatever.
Ralph.
And there's a reason for that, because it's privately owned. It's not federal.
Right.
You've got the ability to print paper money out of nothing and loan it to the government at interest. And you can make a lot of money doing that.
Exactly. How did these Fed Reserve bankers seize control of the ability to create money from the Congress?
From the Constitution?
Yep.
From the Congress.
Well, Congress created it. They passed the legislation, but there is no constitutional authority to do that. Congress was given the power to regulate the value of money.
Right, so how did the bankers seize control?
The value of coining. Notice the money we're carrying today is not coined. There's no coin. There's some coins, but the majority of our money is in paper.
Yeah.
Not coined.
Right.
So Congress did this unconstitutionally. There's no question about that.
In 1913. Congress
had the power to coin money and regulate the value thereof, except in our society, in America, they've got the private reserve has the ability to coin money and regulate the value thereof.
Yeah. Now, one of the primary ways that these international bankers make money is by loaning money to the governments at interest, okay? And oftentimes this occurs before or during a war. So my question, Ralph, is when these central banks are created, doesn't it seem very interesting that almost always wars follow almost immediately after?
Yeah, that was because the private reserve was created in 1913, and we got into World War II, World War I, I think, about 1916 or 1918, yep. Something like that.
And the same happened in the 1800s.
One followed the other. And of course, they paid for the war by borrowing from the private reserve.
Yep.
Notice, by the way, I'm calling it the private reserve because it's not federal.
It's not the federal.
Yeah, no, you're right.
I'm calling it what it is. It's a private banking reserve. But it's not even a reserve because it's our money.
Right. In America, the first central bank was created in 1791. The second central bank was created in 1816. Then they ran into some trouble, I guess, because both Andrew Jackson and Abraham Lincoln were both opposed. They opposed the notion of a central bank. Lincoln even went so far as to create $450 million worth of greenbacks to defy the central bankers. So my question is, tell everyone how the bankers have been willing to kill or try to kill those presidents who dare stand in their way.
In 1832, Andrew Jackson, who was already once elected in 1828, he was seeking re-election. He ran on a very simple platform, bank and no Jackson, or Jackson and no bank. And he was elected at that time with the largest majority ever as to the presidency. And so he made sure that the bank was not renewed in 1832.
Mm-hmm.
And so 1836. So in 1837, the bankers in Europe planned the American Civil War. And that's the story told not only in the Jesse James story, but also in the Unseen Hand.
Right.
You can learn that the bankers created the Civil War. It was fought on the issue of slavery, but the real purpose was to create a central bank.
Yeah. Now, I'm glad you brought up the Civil War, because right then we see the Rothschild bankers at their very worst, where what they tried to do was divide America and create two separate nations, and by doing so, these nations would be much easier to control than just one vast nation. Give us the inside story about what the Rothschilds were doing before and during the Civil War.
That's correct. Let's just briefly cover. The War of 1816 popped up after the War of 1812 popped up right after the Central Bank was denied a renewal charter 1936. So the plan was that they had to create a central bank, still get the United States to do it, and so they created a group called the Knights of the Golden Circle in 1837. I know I'm doing this very quickly, but we'll do it. We don't have much time. 1837, the European bankers created a group called the Knights of the Golden Circle, whose purpose was to come to the United States and convince the American people we needed to go to war over the issue of slavery. Mm-hmm. And the reason they wanted to get the North to fight the South was because America was developing a navy, and if Europe decided to send troops, the navy would prohibit them from sending, first of all, the troops mm-hmm. through, plus any goods they needed, supplies, later on. So they couldn't bomb the war from across to Europe. They didn't have an air force. All they had was a navy. So America was decided to divide the North and the South over the issue of slavery. And they did that. Mm-hmm. And that was the reason the war was fought. We were told this is the only way you get brother to fight brother, was over the very volatile issue of slavery.
Right.
But the real reason was to create a central bank. And Lincoln outboxed them by printing the paper money himself that was not borrowed. And so the bankers assassinated Abraham Lincoln.
Yeah.
The Knights of the Golden Circle, John Wilkes Booth was a member. He made sure that they took this man out, just like they tried to take Andrew Jackson out in about 1832 when Jackson opposed the central bank.
Mm-hmm.
One of the best-kept secrets of the Civil War, Ralph, was an arrangement between Abraham Lincoln and Alexander II, the Tsar of Russia. Alexander sent the Russian Navy into the ports of New York and San Francisco, which sent a signal to Europe that he was aligning with Lincoln's government. Tell everyone a little bit about that.
Yeah, see, this is the problem. The South realized that with Lincoln, who was using the Navy to blockade the South, they couldn't get the goods in. So the Southern government contracted with French and English builders, shipbuilders, to build huge blockade running ships heavily armed that could get through and bring the goods in to continue the war. So Lincoln realized he needed an ally. And he looked around Europe, and the only one he could find that didn't have a central bank was Russia.
Mm-hmm.
He worked a deal out with the Tsar of Russia to bring the fleet to the United States. And they came, and we'll just talk about the East Coast. They came to the East Coast, and as they were coming across the ocean, the Tsar of Russia gave their admirals orders. They were to take orders only from Abraham Lincoln or to engage any ship that engaged the ship of the United States Navy. So that when Russia got into the war, England and France canceled the orders because they realized they didn't want to fight Russia. Russia had the largest navy at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as a way of paying for that, there was the Tsar's rental fleet. That's what I jokingly call it. The United States bought Alaska to pay Russia money because foreign aid is unconstitutional. We cannot give $1 of American money to a foreign nation. So Lincoln realized that, and he had to buy land. So he bought Alaska. We bought the Louisiana Purchase from France. That was already established in about 1860.
Mm-hmm.
So we could send money to a foreign nation, and that's what Lincoln did. He bought Alaska, a bunch of ice that no one knew anything about, didn't even know where it was probably.
Yeah, they called it Seward's Folly.
But it was the attempt of the Northern government to save the Union, and it did so.
Yeah. Now, Ralph, I have one more question, but before we close out today, again, give everybody your website address and let them know how they can find your book. They're fantastic books.
Well, you're very kind. If they want to go to Ralph Epperson, R-A-L-P-H, Epperson, E-P-P-E-R-S-O-N, .com, RalphEpperson.com, that'll be my website, and you can get the catalog, in fact, the order form there. All my books are described. And you can take a look at what I've written and see that there's something going on in this country. I've been researching and studying it for over 40 years.
Yeah, you better believe it. Now, you mentioned before the Knights of the Golden Circle and how they were responsible, along with John Wilkes Booth, in the assassination of Abraham Lincoln. But what a lot of people don't know is they were also instrumental in the creation or the formation of the Ku Klux Klan. Give us a little bit of insight into that.
The bankers, after the Civil War was over, did not get what they wanted. They assassinated Lincoln, and they still didn't get their central bank. So they decided to start a second Civil War. Now, when I was in, civics classes in high school, I learned the slogan, "The South Shall Rise Again."
And mm-hmm.
I never really heard what that meant. We all presumed it meant, well, it'd be rise again after being destroyed by a war. But the North didn't say, the North shall rise again. they were going to do it was the Knights of the Golden Circle and members of the Masonic Lodge created the Ku Klux Klan to start the white versus black riots in the South to get the South into a position of wanting to have another civil war. Presumably the North would step in and say, we're not going to tolerate that, and Northern troops would come back to the South, and the civil war would start all over again. And, of course, they failed.
Mm-hmm.
But that was the purpose of the Ku Klux Klan, created by the Knights of the Golden Circle and members of the Masonic Lodge.
Huh. I had another question, but I want to ask you this instead. Why is it important to know about Jesse James? Like, how does it teach us about what's gone on in the past 200 years of American history?
Well, see, the point is that Jesse was a 33rd degree Mason. He was one of the major Masons in this country. And the Masons take oaths to protect their brothers. And this is why the true story of Jesse James has never been told until I wrote my book, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And I know more about that story because Jesse was right in the middle of the Knights of the Golden Circle. He was a 33rd degree Mason. And he was right in the middle of the creation of the Ku Klux Klan and the attempt to start a second civil war.
Wow. Well, Ralph, this has been fascinating today. And we also wish we could have got to Albert Pike and Freemasonry and all of these other things. But anybody that wants to find out more about this, they can go to Ralph's website, look at his books. And this guy is a wealth of knowledge. And it was a real joy to go through his
Jesse James
book.
I sent Victor Hogg the book all week, so now I get to read it. But you can go to SenatorJesseJames.com and order the book for yourself.
Right.
It sounds fascinating, Ralph.
Thank you so very much. It is fascinating. It's an incredible story, and I tried to make it public.
Well, Ralph, thanks for coming on our show today. Keep up the good work, and if you put anything else out there, you let us know, and we'll bring it back on, okay?
You're very kind. Thanks very much, Victor.
Oh,
thank you, Ralph.
My pleasure.
Well, we hope everybody out there has a good weekend. It's 60 degrees here in the middle of January. It's like spring outside, so we're going to get this show up, and we're going to go for a walk. We're going to enjoy some of the weather, so we hope you enjoy your weekend also.
Mm-hmm.
Until Monday, when we'll be back, keep your eyes open because there is a lot going on.
Have a good weekend wherever you are.